thank you. We will now discuss agenda paper 2. This paper analyzes comments on the committee's tentative agenda decision about the applicability of the sale and leaseback requirements in IFRS 16 to a transaction in which an entity sells its equity interest in a subsidiary that holds only a real estate asset and then leases that asset back. The committee received 19 comment letters by the comment letter deadline. 4 respondents agree with the committee's analysis and conclusions. Most of the other respondents agree with the outcome explained in the tentative agenda decision. That is, the recognized gain reflects the requirements in paragraph 100A of IFRS 16. However, they raise concerns about aspects of the committee's technical analysis, and many suggest adding a standard setting project to the work plan to address this matter. Paragraphs 14 to 58 discuss respondents' comments together with our analysis. Based on our analysis, we continue to support the committee's technical conclusions in the tentative agenda decision and think that the committee could respond to the questions submitted by publishing an agenda decision with explanatory material as set out in Appendix A. However, for the reasons set out in paragraphs 53 to 54, we think the committee could instead recommend an amendment to the loss of control requirements in IFRS 10 to add a cross-reference to the sale and leaseback requirements in IFRS 16. I will now direct your attention to the question on page 20 and ask which of these options you agree with.
Thank you for that, Ken. If I may, before I open up for discussion from the committee, just a couple of observations and a request, I guess, for the discussions, if that's all right. So having read the comment letters and as reflected in the staff analysis in the paper, we've really got a range of different views in the comment letters. I think both about whether it is appropriate to issue an agenda decision or to do standard setting. But also, if you read carefully, I think the reasons for reaching the outcome that many agree with in the agenda decision might be different between different respondents. In particular, I think some are focusing very much on the fact that in this fact pattern, it's a single asset entity. Maybe that's very much a part of the reason for their analysis, whereas others are looking more generally at the interaction between IFRS 10 and IFRS 16 in the situation where there's loss of control of a company and an asset is leased back, if I can put it that way. I think it will be particularly important if people would like to proceed to issue an agenda decision that we are very clear on the fact that it doesn't change or add to the existing requirements, given the very specific requirements related to this transaction, both in IFRS 10 and in IFRS 16, and also that we have a common understanding of the reasons for the analysis. And I think some respondents quite rightly pointed out that it was perhaps unclear in some instances what could be extrapolated from this agenda decision based on the way that the analysis would work. And so I think the rationale for how people get to where they are if they support an agenda decision is more important than ever, I think, in this type of case. So with that special request, can I see who would like to comment on this agenda paper? Sophie.
Yes, hello everybody. So I note that the concerns that I raised during the September meeting are also shared by several respondents. And like these respondents, I continue to believe that there is a consistency issue with other similar transactions. And I fully agree with the comments that are reflected in paragraph 18 and 19 of the staff paper. And indeed, in similar situation, IS 16, IS 38, and IS 40 include a specific cross-reference to IFRS 16, And for consistency purpose, I believe that it should be also the case for IFRS 10. And I also note that even if the application of the date has been postponed, the amendments of IFRS 10 and IS 28 confirm that there was a conflict with IFRS 10. And so for these reasons, for consistency purpose, and even if I agree with the outcome explaining the tentative agenda decision, that is just to recognize a partial gain, I would recommend an amendment to add in IFRS 10 a cross-reference to IFRS 16, and especially if it could be the case in the context of the annual improvement of IFRS standards. Thank you.
Thank you, Sophie. Very clear. Bertrand?
I'm okay with the basis of the technical answer that we reach in the September meeting, and that we that the staff is consistently proposing for this meeting, i.e. that both standards, IFRS 10 and IFRS 16, apply. So on a pure technical standpoint, I would be okay in finalizing the agenda decision. But then I also do appreciate the fact that some respondents raised the fact that the submission that was received by the Interpretations Committee is probably describing a quite simple fact pattern, and that probably more complicated questions may arise on such types of arrangements. So I was wondering, at the end of the agenda paper, the staff is asking the question whether the committee agreed to finalize the agenda decision or to recommend an amendment. And I was wondering, I have a question for you, Sue, and for the staff. What about and? So doing both, finalizing the agenda decision and recommending an amendment to a standard, I don't know which one, which could enable in a second step to eventually consider the some wider questions that were raised by respondents. I know it's something rather unusual because in the past, when we have done both an agenda decision and an amendment, it was generally to first confirm what the standards were writing and proposing the ISB to the board to perform an amendment to a standard because the outcome was not entirely satisfactory. So I quite admit the fact that it would be rather unusual to do both there, but it could enable eventually by doing both to answer those wider questions maybe. So I was wondering what you would think of doing both eventually.
Giving my sort of thoughts on that. I think as a general proposition, sort of simultaneously doing an agenda decision and deciding to do standard setting is not what we should be tending to do. And that's because usually an agenda decision is issued because the committee has concluded that there's sort of sufficient basis in the existing requirements to know how to answer the question. And so it seems a little bit contradictory to say, well, but let's go and patch things up. I think the exception to that is where there's two slightly different issues. So if I look at the other sale and leaseback issue that we looked at, the sort of the day one gain recognition one with the variable payments on the lease, I think there it was slightly different because the committee was opining on the sort of first instance of accounting and the standard setting was for the subsequent accounting. So there were two slightly different issues. I'm not so sure that's the case here. So I'd be cautious, I think, taking that approach is my gut reaction. But others might have comments on that. Thanks, Bertrand. Bob?
Thanks, Sue. I previously supported the tentative agenda decision, and I continue to support it and support finalizing it. I think what we've done in this agenda decision is we've told people the model that's in the standard that can answer the fact pattern that was presented to us, as well as several others. I think the way I look at this, the way the analysis goes, you first apply step one, which is apply IFRS 10 to assess whether you've lost control of the subsidiary. Now, that is necessary to see whether you can derecognize the assets and liabilities and how to calculate the gain or loss, but that's not sufficient. You still have to go further, and then step two, you apply IFRS 16 paragraph 99, which leads you to the paragraphs in IFRS 15 around control. And so that's also necessary then before you can derecognize the building and the fact pattern. And then if you do meet all those criteria, then it leads you to paragraphs 100 to 102 in 16, how to calculate the gain, loss, how to do the subsequent accounting. If you don't get derecognition, you follow paragraphs 103. So I think we've laid it out. I think it's all there. I think it it all flows together and logically. And it's not the first time we've had conflicts, or quote unquote conflicts in the standards. It's just, you know, we're telling you, you've got to apply both of these. So I'm satisfied. Bertrand's comment, I don't object to if the board was to add a project on top of the agenda decision, but I like you, Sue, I don't think it's necessary, because I think we've given people through the agenda decision what they need to understand to get the accounting right.
Can I ask you a follow-up question, if I may, Bob, just to make sure?
Okay.
I understand it's not a trick. It's not a trick. How important is it to you that this is an SPV? So is that fundamental to your analysis, or, you know, setting aside other complications, if as a general proposition I had a company that had more going on in it, and as part of the sale transaction you were to lease back another asset, would you look at the interaction in the same way?
So my dividing line, and maybe that's a good question we need to address, but my dividing line would be a business. I think this could, the model we laid out does handle entities that are not businesses that have multiple assets. And that you would, you know, file IFRS 10 for all those others, you'd follow, then you'd have to layer on the additional requirements for those assets within that entity that you leased back.
Okay, interesting. Okay, thank you. Renata, did you want to comment?
Yeah, I still believe that the best way that we should consider the situation is that before the selling the company, we have only the asset in the financial statement. And after going to the sales back transaction, we still have the assets, but now we have the liability, because basically, in my opinion, we are looking for our financing. That's the same opinion that I had before. That's slightly different from the others.
Okay, thank you, Renata. And so in terms of standard setting versus agenda decision?
Pardon, Sue?
So would you support an agenda decision?
Yeah,
I prefer standard setting. Okay,
no,
thank you.
Support.
Okay, thank you. Carsten?
Yeah, thanks. So I'm also overall supportive of finalizing the agenda decision, as I think we can answer the specific question on the, you know, on the narrow fact pattern that was submitted based on the existing requirements in IFRS. But similar to others, I'm slightly worried about potential unintended consequences on other fact patterns. So as others have noted, the submission and the proposed agenda decision is addressing a very simple fact pattern. And I believe IFRS standards provide an adequate basis to answer the question on that narrow fact pattern. But nonetheless, I still feel that the wording of the agenda decision could potentially be improved. If issued as drafted, I'm slightly worried about the, you know, these potential unintended consequences on other similar fact patterns. And let me maybe explain my concern. So I do agree with the analysis that both IFRS 10 and IFRS 16 apply to this fact pattern. I also agree with the outcome that the gain that an entity recognizes reflects the requirement in paragraph 100A of IFRS 16. So in my view, whilst the agenda decision explicitly refers to both paragraph B98 of IFRS 10 and paragraph 100A of IFRS 16, the agenda decision maybe does not clearly explain the interaction of the gain recognition requirements in those two standards. Now, the staff paper is suggesting an overlay approach where IFRS 10 is applied first and IFRS 16 is applied thereafter. I realize the agenda decision is probably silent on this particular point for a reason, as there were divergent views on this point from committee members previously. So even though the final wording of the agenda decision or the proposed final wording of the agenda decision does not refer to this concept of an overlay approach where IFRS 10 is applied first, I wonder whether people may still read the agenda decision to suggest such an approach. And I think there may be a risk that, you know, people may interpret this agenda decision as setting a precedent for requiring an overlay approach more generally to other fact patterns as well. So because of this, I wonder whether, you know, some tweaks to the words might be helpful to be absolutely clear that we are only addressing this very narrow fact pattern and to avoid any impression of establishing a broader principle of an overlay approach that might be applied more widely. Of course, I realize that we're only addressing this narrow fact pattern in the agenda decision, but I still think it might be an improvement to the agenda decision if we, you know, clarify this point in some way in the final wording. On balance, I feel that we should, you know, still finalize the agenda decision in any case, you know, ideally with some tweaks to the wording along the lines that I just described. I do think IFRS standards provide an adequate basis to conclude on this narrow fact pattern, and so I think we should issue an agenda decision to say that. My concern about the other option outlined in the staff paper, so to make a narrow scope amendment to the loss of control requirements in IFRS 10, for example, as part of any improvement, would be around two points. The first one is that the question that has been submitted would remain unanswered until that annual improvement becomes effective, which may give rise to structuring opportunities until the effective date of any amendment. And I also fear that any narrow scope standard setting as part of an annual improvement may not be efficient from a cost-benefit perspective, as it would likely not, you know, not solve the issue we are seeing with similar but more complex fact patterns. So probably rather than doing a narrow scope annual improvement, I think it would be a better option to address these questions more broadly as part of the IFRS 10 PIR. So in summary, I think we should go ahead and finalize the agenda decision now and suggest to the board to consider standard setting more broadly as part of the IFRS 10 PIR and also look into the issues around more complex fact patterns that we see in practice.
Mary, did you want to come in?
If I could, that would be great. Apologies for jumping the queue. This is not specifically a reaction to Karsten. It's more generally considering the previous two or three comments. I wanted to flag that as I looked at the comment letters at the analysis, I became concerned about the different places people seem to be coming from when they talked about the agenda decision, and the number of people who focused on this being the appropriate conclusion in kind of this narrow fact pattern. And the reason I have concerns about that is, to me, the analysis, even with the current wording in the agenda decision, is not limited, although it's in the context of the very simple fact pattern that was submitted. There's nothing in the analysis that hinges on it being a single asset entity in a corporate wrapper. It is a general comment about the interaction of IFRS 10 and IFRS 16. And therefore, to me, people have to be comfortable that this is a comment about the general interaction that would not only apply. And, you know, I think about Bob Yule's comment is this is the right response as long as it's not a business. And, you know, and I don't see that limit in this agenda decision. I think one of the things that the whole process has shown me is certainly the overlay approach type thinking, even without that label on it, is a response that an analysis of the literature that certainly is supported and can be reached. What I'm interested in hearing from this group is whether you think that IFRS standards support only that analysis, you know, in the current wording, and that therefore it's appropriate to go ahead with an agenda decision. And that's a very nuanced, challenging question to everybody. But I'd ask those who are commenting still want to comment to talk about whether their view is specific to the very narrow fact pattern or not, and how you tie that back to the interaction of the standards more generally. Thanks, Sue, for letting me get that in and that with a prospective application question for those who are commenting.
Thanks, that's helpful, Mary. And I think just to build on that, the tricky thing is agenda decisions are always in the context of a particular question that was answered by the committee. But I think what I'm very conscious of here is that we might have a number of people agreeing with the outcome, but the reasons we're getting there and how far we think we would go differ. And I think, and I'm not sure how much alignment we have on that. And also I'm not sure how many of those differences can be supported by particular words in the standards. And so that's something I'm keen to try and tease out, just building on, I think, what Mary was saying. Young Soo?
Thank you, Sue. I think I have the same thought as you guys have. First of all, I agree with the outcome of the agenda decision, and I have no problem with that. But I'm concerning about the approach we take in the agenda decision, which is the overlay approach. Overlay approach seems to be a very good idea, but it sounds like it's a very general approach that is not restricted only to the fact pattern in the agenda decision, but can be applied to many other situations, especially whenever there is an interaction between IFRS 10 and 16. And that is why I think many people are worrying about the application of this agenda decision to the other situations that we did not consider in the committee. And another thing I want to say is that in this agenda decision, we proposed the overlay approach, but we didn't say when to apply the overlay approach, and we do not apply the overlay approach. We just say that we have to apply overlay approach in this specific fact pattern. But why in this fact pattern, but not in other fact patterns? So for example, as Sophie said, and the comment letter says, you know, IAS 16, you know, 38 and 40 does not apply the overlay approach. So that there is an inconsistency between our agenda decision and some standards in the IFRS, and we didn't explain why. So that is the concern I think the people has on our agenda decision. So my thought is that we'd better go for a standard setting. I mean, we have to consider at least when to apply the overlay approach, when not to apply the overlay approach before issuing the agenda decision. So, you know, that is my you know, the thought. I agree with the conclusion itself. I have no objections. I completely agree with the conclusion. But what I'm worrying about, why we have to apply only the overlay approach in this situation? So that is my comment.
Thank you, Young Soo. Brian.
Thank you, Sue, and hello, everyone. I looked at this paper from two perspectives. Firstly, I reconsidered the original technical analysis, and I continue to agree with that original technical analysis. I think it reflects the complementary application of IFRS 10 and IFRS 16 to this fact pattern, and it results in what seems like an appropriate outcome, which is elimination of the portion of the gain that relates to the rights retained under the lease back. So I'm good with that technical analysis. I think for me, the key, for me personally, the key technical reference supporting that is the fact that paragraphs 99 and 100 very consciously use the word transfer to refer to what we think of as being the sale leg for the reasons set out in B261. So I'm kind of good with the analysis of the fact pattern, and responding to Mary's challenge, maybe there's nothing in the fact pattern that's really limiting my analysis. But clearly, with the benefit of hindsight, in light of the discussion we're having today, clearly it would have been better if IFRS 16 had contained a consequential amendment to IFRS 10, specifically that the ED that preceded IFRS 16 had contained the consequential amendment, so that it could have been exposed and could have been debated and potential application issues could have been identified. So that was my technical perspective. From a, I guess my second perspective, it was really thinking about what's the benefit, what's the utility of issuing the current agenda decision. And I fear that the benefit, the utility of an agenda decision right now would be very limited. Now, I deal with sale and lease back a lot in my day job. If I got this fact pattern as a query on my desk, I would refuse to answer it. I would send it back. I would say, where's the tax balance? Why is there no accrued or deferred income? Why are there no accrued or deferred expenses? If everything's been done through intercompany, why isn't there an intercompany balance? You know, so I don't think there's much utility in relation to this particular fact pattern, because I do not believe the fact pattern. And then I think about what's the utility in relation to more complex, more realistic fact patterns. And I worry about that. I worry about that. Everything I've heard since we debated this in the committee a few months ago, everything I read in the comment letters, and to some extent the discussion we've been having now, suggests to me that this agenda decision will not settle the issue. What this agenda decision will do is it will provoke a whole series of discussions about where the line is. Mary was saying people are coming at this question with slightly different technical perspectives, and as a result, the people who agree with the agenda decision will potentially be drawing the line in different places, and people who don't really in their heart of hearts agree with the agenda decision will be trying to limit it to this very narrow fact pattern. As I say, with the benefit of hindsight, it would have been great to have exposed a consequential amendment in the ED that preceded IFRS 16 to have a debate about where the line would be. I was really interested in Bob's comments that he thought the line was whether or not there was an asset disposal or a business disposal. And maybe that would be a really good place to draw the line. But I can't see anything in the current analysis. I can't see anything in the current standards that would permit me to draw the line in precisely that place kind of right now. So I support the technical analysis, but I'm really worried about the benefit or the utility of this agenda decision. And therefore, on balance, I would vote for narrow scope standard setting. I wouldn't push this as far. I wouldn't push it as far out as the PIR. I think it's something that can be done before then, given what's already happened. But I do think, for reasons of benefit and utility, I would support narrow scope standard setting rather than finalising the agenda decision.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Bob, did I see you put your hand up? Did you want to comment?
To clarify my point about the question you asked me and where I would divide the line, and I said I would divide it at a business. And the reason for that, that paragraph 98 of IFRS 16, it lays out a scope. It says it applies to if an entity transfers an asset and then leases it back. Now, if I've got an entity that's not a business, got a bunch of assets and liabilities, it transfers, it's got a multiple element set when it transfers that entity. It transfers a set, each individual asset and liability, so it's multiple elements, so I can see the transfer of an asset and a lease back. When I transfer or, that's not, we've never looked at that as multiple elements. That is a business. So there's not a transfer of an asset and a lease back. That's why I said, answered the question that you asked me that way.
Okay, that's helpful to know. It's not how I would have read the words, but it's interesting to see your logic, because I still think a business has assets and you can lease them back. But I see your point, and that's fair. But
it's a unit of account issue.
Yeah, probably further highlighting the next question after you get past the simple fact pattern. Thanks for that. Who was next? Guy.
Thanks, Sue. If I jump to the chase, I think where my head is at is a recommendation for some form of narrow scope standard setting. If I explain my rationale on that, I too think in the narrow fact pattern, which again is perhaps an unrealistic fact pattern, the outcome remains reasonable. However, the interaction between IFRS 10 and IFRS 16 is not as clear as it could be, absent some form of cross-reference similar to what was done in other standards. And the interaction of 10 with other standards, in particular IAS 28, doesn't seem to have been addressed consistently in prior deliberations by the board, and so that is a cause for concern in that it's not clear that this is the only analysis that can be employed here. I was wondering, similar to what a few others had said, was whether an alternative approach is to proceed on both fronts with finalizing the agenda decision, but as well embarking on some form of narrow scope standard setting, whereby the agenda decision would somehow be limited to the narrow fact pattern submitted, and the standard setting would help clarify the more common and complex fact patterns. But I was thinking that's not really going to work because in addressing the narrow fact pattern the way the agenda decision does, it does seem to address it in a more general interaction type perspective, and I think that's going to make it very difficult to apply that same sort of concept in broader or more complex scenarios. I think it'd be difficult for someone to ignore the agenda decision. And I'm not sure that is necessarily problematic, I'm not sure we've fully contemplated or considered the consequences of that broader application of that principle. We've only thought about the narrow fact pattern. And so I have some concern about, establishing that sort of general principle when we haven't fully thought through all of the consequences. There have been comments on the call today about, perhaps drawing lines as to where that might apply and where it might not, such as a distinction between a business versus a non-business. But again, I don't think that dividing line is necessarily clear in the standards as they're currently constituted. You know, I think it also potentially raises concerns with other interaction issues. You know, again, if I go back to the IFRS 10, IS 28 issue, I'm not sure what this agenda decision would mean to how someone has previously navigated IFRS 10 versus IS 28 and has not adopted the deferred amendments to IFRS 10 and IS 28 from September 2014. This as a broader principle, seems to take a different approach there, and I'm not entirely sure that won't have implications to an entity that hasn't already adopted the September 2014 amendment. So that causes me some pause too, as another source of unintended consequence. Now, I think someone had raised the notion of maybe issuing the agenda decision, but to try and make it clear that it only applies to this narrow fact pattern. I'm struggling with doing that as well, because I think as soon as you do that, it starts to call into question the general premise that we're using in the agenda decision to answer the question. If we're saying, well, it only applies to this narrow single asset entity question, it does cause one pause if that is implying a flaw in our thinking in some way. And then the dual approach of issuing an agenda decision and embarking on standard setting, I think, runs the risk of a standard setting project maybe ultimately taking a different direction than what the agenda decision says. You know, that may not be terribly likely, but there is the potential for that, which is another concern. And so, for all of those reasons, I think I am leaning towards, as I said, recommending narrow scope standard setting rather than finalizing the agenda decision. And it does strike me in doing that is going to be, it's going to have to address the more complex scenarios rather than this simple fact pattern. I can't really imagine a project that was narrow scope and somehow distinguished a wrapper or single asset entity as distinct from something broader potentially. So I think we would have to address the broader, more complex scenarios through that standard setting as well, which I think will then provide guidance on the fact patterns that we're more apt to see in practice, or rather than this rather artificial scenario that we're dealing with in the agenda decision. So in summary, I would vote for narrow scope standard setting.
Paul, are you coming in?
Yes. Thank you, Sue. We're on record, of course, as having expressed some concerns about the agenda decision as it was originally worded, while acknowledging that in that very narrow fact pattern, we don't really object to the outcome. But some of the points similar to, I think, the questions that Mary raised and that Guy was just speaking to, is in terms of trying to drive consistency in practice, I think the approach would be if an issuer had a fact pattern, that issuer should be asking how close is their fact pattern to the specific fact pattern in the agenda decision. And obviously, the closer their fact pattern is to that in the agenda decision, the more likely the accounting described in the agenda decision would be applicable to that particular issuer. So that starts to raise then a lot of questions about how important are individual items in the fact pattern to that analysis. And as you start to broaden it out, is this still the appropriate analysis? Some things, and I think, by the way, these are things that if the board were to take on narrow scope standard setting, would have to think about it as well. I mean, the fact pattern says it's a single asset in the entity. So how important is that if you get two, three, four assets? the fact pattern says it's not a business. So to Bob's point earlier, how important is whether it is or is not a business to it? The fact pattern says that you sold 100% of the entity. So again, how important is that to the fact pattern if you sold, if you relinquished control but sold something less than 100%? There are the points that I think Guy made about how this might align with the amendments to IAS 28 and things like that. But then lastly, a concern we have actually goes back to paragraph 98 that Bob was talking about, which doesn't seem to be addressed, which is really the question of, well, to what degree does IRS 16 apply? And I think that in this fact pattern, most everyone agrees that IFRS 10 applies to the loss of control of the entity. I think folks would agree that IFRS 16 applies to the lease of the asset. What is perhaps less clear is whether this is a sale leaseback as that term is meant in IFRS 16, which might get to Young Soo's question about why would we use an overlay here and we wouldn't elsewhere. So if we go back to paragraph 98, as Bob was describing, it says, if an entity transfers an asset to another entity and leases that asset back, we've got a sale lease back. Well, legally, what was transferred was shares in an entity, and what was leased back was an asset. So it seems like at a minimum, to address things like why an overlay, is this analysis the correct analysis, there needs to be some discussion about why in this fact pattern the committee believes that the transfer of the shares of a legal entity is the same thing as the asset. And again, in this very narrow fact pattern, I think we could see why that conclusion would be appropriate. But if you start to broaden the fact pattern at all, I think that makes that analysis much more critical and, in my judgment, a missing part of the analysis thus far. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. I think I agree with you. And at the heart of it, this simple fact pattern is helpful because it makes it so blunt that there's this tension between IFRS 10 and IFRS 16. But the question is, that's, you know, it's not really unique to such a simple fact pattern, you know, and where do you draw the line? And I think everybody's got their own line in their heads at the moment. Thanks for that. Jens.
First of all, thank you. It's difficult to go so late. Next time I try to go earlier. Because now I need to pick up all what I've heard before. I try to give some structure to my feedback and try to concentrate first on the question raised by the committee. And with regard to the question, I would vote for finalizing the agenda decision as set out in the appendix. I would not vote for standard setting, so not narrow scope standard setting. And I would definitely not vote for option B that is presented in the questions for the committee. Albeit, when standard setting is thought about, I would like to add an option C rather than to add a cross-reference in IFRS 10 and delete the cross-references in 16, 38, and 40. So I think this would be more helpful because for me, these cross-references are for convenience purposes. As far as I read through IFRS, so these are convenience cross-references and are not material cross-references. And now coming to my conclusion, why I said to go with finalizing the agenda decision. For me, the general question is, and I don't know whether I agree with, but may have because I'm German, but I would not call it an overlay approach. I would apply it or would call it a staggered approach. So first of all, you apply IFRS 10 or you apply IFRS 15 and conclude whether you have a transfer. And for me, transfer is the passing of control. And this could be via a share deal or could be via an asset deal, but it's a transfer. And then if you have a transfer afterward, you consider, and therefore I would call it a staggered approach, whether you lease back a particular asset that has been transferred, either via a share deal or an asset deal. And therefore, why I do think it, that the real question is whether there's a transfer. I wouldn't, or I would disagree with Bob. I do not think that a business is a dividing line, because if you have a transfer of a business, it could be either via a share deal or via an asset deal. And when you lease back an asset, and my understanding of how IFRS 10 and IFRS 16 interact, so the scoping, I would first look to the scoping of 10 and 16, and they are not exclusive of each other. So it's not said that if you apply 10, you don't apply 16, or if you apply 16, you don't apply 10. So you have to apply both. And for me, it's clear from the basis of inclusion of IFRS 16, so BC 261, that even if for any scenario where we have a transfer, and this transfer could be either via share deal or via an asset deal, you would apply lease accounting, lease back accounting for assets lease back. And therefore, I do think that the agenda decisions, so coming back with my initial comment, should be finalized as is. And it addresses the other fact patterns, and I disagree that we need, and I think this is picking up a little bit of Mary's comments and where I am. I don't think that there is a conflict or that we need a dividing line for businesses. And this is an, I would apply it from a holistic perspective, that first of all, there is a transfer, and then I do have a lease back. And this is clear from the standards, so there is no standard setting needed to conclude. And the conclusion would for me be the same, and this I agree with what Brian said. There might be different fact patterns, but the principle is addressed in our agenda, in our tentative agenda decision. And thus, I would prefer to finalize our tentative agenda decision in this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Jens. Lisa.
Thanks, Sue. So different to Jens, I continue to have the same view that I had when we first discussed this submission, in that I agree with the overall conclusion and how you actually calculate the gain on the sale leaseback. However, I do believe that that we should have a narrow scope amendment in looking at amending IFRS 10, and that's in order to ensure that consistency. Just to the points that were discussed, in my mind, whether or not I'm transferring an entity with a single asset or a business, if I have a sale and then I turn around and I do have a lease back of an asset that was sold, I think that you should apply the sale lease back accounting treatment in IFRS 16, and therefore including the reference to that, just like the staff is highlighted in the staff paper on paragraph 26, where other standards reference IFRS 16 sale leaseback accounting, I think that it should be consistent in IFRS 10. My concern would be is that if it's not, even though I know that within the paper it says it should be understood that that was the intention, I think there's always going to be a tendency that if it's not written down, individuals could have different views and start interpreting it differently, which is kind of seen in the differing views we have about whether or not it's a single asset or a business. Probably the other area where I differ, and I still come back to this, and I know I make the point the first time we spoke about it, was I do feel that we should also, we're going to have a narrow scope amendment also, look at IFRS 15 and just clarifying in paragraph 5 of the scope where it says that leases are out of scope of 15, that there is just something there that says except for in the event if you have the sale leaseback accounting. I think that would also help to not cause any questions around the decision we took on a different paper that was referenced originally, that was a June 2019 paper. So that's my comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. So it sounds like on the sort of breadth application point, you're in a similar place to Jens, although your punchline regarding an agenda decision is the opposite. So
yes.
That's interesting. Anne, sorry, I just saw that you wanted to come in after Jens.
Thanks, Sue. Jens, I just wanted to ask you, your view is to take away the cross-referencing that exists in IAS 16, and that was a counter view we haven't heard. But we actually, if we don't do that, do you see that we've got a problem at the moment between IFRS 10 and 16 because we don't have the cross-referencing?
No, by any means not.
Pardon?
No, I don't have an.
You don't see that there is a conflict currently between 10 and 16?
No, I don't see a conflict because I see. references in 1638 are for convenience purposes only.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Jim.
All right. I'm fine with finalizing the current agenda decision, knowing that it's what we do. We get a question, we get a clearly defined, narrow or not, but it's clearly defined fact pattern. We should give them an answer. And that's what we have discussed. And we end up with this agenda decision, and we have no reason to throw it away. And so that's why I'm saying I'm fine with issuing this current agenda decision. Maybe a little bit word tweaking, but I'm fine in general. But I also share the concerns, as Manny just mentioned. We are thinking about the fact patterns way broader, more complicated, and in the real world. So this blunt, simplified fact pattern won't do the field any good. It's overly simplified, or it's too simple to be true. So what we should do, as Bertrand just mentioned, just opening this up, this two-step approach, and also I also hear Sue's answer to Bertrand that we usually don't give an agenda decision and do the narrow scope. But this is the way I see it. By giving the agenda decision, we simply answer this narrow and clearly defined fact pattern. Nothing wrong with it. But the second approach, the narrow scope, is answering something way more complicated and broadly defined fact patterns beyond this point. It's not answering these questions alone. As many just mentioned, these questions, concerns, even disagreements in the field given by these solid professional institutions, big firms as PwC or KPMG, all these reputable professionals are questioning these overlay approach or some other approach. If we don't give them a narrow scope or some other ways or PIR solutions, all these concerns and will still be out there. And sometime down the road, if a company see a similar but not exactly the same fact pattern, they could do two possible things. If they liked our overlay approach, they could quote the agenda decision we issued saying this similar, just like Paul just mentioned. How similar, we don't know, but they like the overlay approach. They will use this as the base to justify their accounting decision. If they don't, they will say they're not exactly the same. We'll do some other approach, not overlay. We'll pick one exclusive, or we'll create some other relationship between these two standards. These will cause diversity, will cause troublesome results. That's what we should think about. So my suggestion is to do a two-step. But the second step is not definitely not answering the first one, because we couldn't do that, as Sue just mentioned. We should think about the relationship between these standards and give the field a clear approach, overlay or not, or exclusive or some other combinations, that's fine. But we should give them a clear path or a clear approach or way of thinking so that we avoid diversity in practice. That's my comments and concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Goro.
Thank you very much. Actually, that I have very similar view as Jim and also Bertrand. And when I thought I read that this agenda paper first, I thought that why we do not pursue the both the final agenda decision while that we are recommending that the vote to amend the narrow scope amendment. You know, that the clearly, as everyone says, that the this agenda decision is too narrowly focused. And the as Brian suggested, that I don't think that this, you know, that the this, well, we can answer to the submission with this agenda decision, but I'm afraid that this agenda decision might be very useful to many stakeholders, including the financial statement users. Anyway, this agenda decision, I expect that this would rather invoke a series of questions. How can we apply, well, how can we do that the under more complex or real life examples. Therefore, anyway, we need to some kind of narrow scope amendment. And if it is somewhat contradictory to do both at the same time as Sue suggested, probably we can do that the narrow scope amendment in the course of the PIR of IFRS 10. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Goro. Mary, I think you came in previously. Is that correct? Yes. Okay. Donna.
Thank you. I have to say, I was quite. I had a pretty firm view when I came in at 13:59 in South African time, and now I'm between a rock and a hard place. So I'm very empathetic and actually supportive of what Jen was saying, in the sense that I don't agree. It is a staggered approach. IFRS 10, because it's a consolidated entity, then moving into IFRS 16 to kind of consider the sale and lease back. But what I'm starting to kind of get to grips with and appreciating when I read through the comment letters is that there is a deep discomfort by the users of IFRS regarding when you're applying a perceived principle versus something that is explicit. So I think if you've been around IFRS for many years, et cetera, there is this perceived knowledge, this perceived approach. You look at the bigger scheme, you look at the different standards, you see how they all interact. So as a practitioner, a long-term practitioner, it makes sense. IFRS 10, and if IFRS, once you've done IFRS 10, you move to IFRS 16. But I think that as people have, their appreciation is not necessarily moving away from principle, substance over form. I think substance over form is lovely. We get to the answer, and that's why I'm 100% in agreement with the technical analysis for the paper, for the agenda. But what I'm starting to realize is that by putting out the agenda, we are actually putting out something a little bit more than that. We're actually explaining a principle and codifying that principle. Now, is it our right as the IFRIC members and the IFRIC committee to actually codify a principle? Is that not something that should actually be done by the ISC? I'm in agreement with Lisa, for example, where it actually makes no difference in my mind whether in actual fact it's a business or if it's a single asset. You should be getting to the same answer. Again, principle applying, but do we in actual fact, the counter, so as a producer of financial information, I regularly have fights with my auditors where I kind of say, but the standard doesn't say that. You're making me do something because that's how you've interpreted it. And I do believe that unfortunately I've actually changed my mind where I was agreement that we actually conclude and agree on the agenda. But I actually think that this is actually a far bigger matter, and maybe it should actually be taken to the ISP as a limited amendment. ISP, because of the fact that to codify essentially a principle instead of what's in which in my mind is not really what we as the IFRIC should be doing. Thanks, that's me.
Thank you, Donna, and apologies to everybody who's having to wait so long. It's such an interesting discussion. We all want a say, which is good. Bertrand, you wanted to come back in?
Just to
to comment. Following your answer to my first question, I didn't react it. I didn't react. Sorry, but at the same time, since then, Carsten and Goro have suggested at a minimum, if we decide as a committee to issue the agenda decision as is written, then we at a minimum should report to the board. Something around having a specific focus relating to the PIR on IFRS 10, because effectively, as many have said, I think that whether a single asset entity or a business or whatever, the principles would be exactly the same and would apply exactly the same. You would consider IFRS 10 for the recognition principle, let's put it that way, for the derecognition principle in this regard, and then IFRS 16 on sale and leaseback more as a kind of measurement principle within this transaction. And whether, as you mentioned, so whether it's a business or not, whether there are more than one asset or just one asset, I think ultimately the outcome would be exactly the same. The point is effectively there in this agenda decision, we are setting this principle, but we are not appreciating some broader consequences a more complex submission could have led the staff and then us to effectively consider prior to issuing the answer. So I think that if we were to decide to effectively issue the agenda decision, then at a minimum, we should report to the board this specific example as being something to really consider within the PIR, the PIR of IFRS 10.
Thanks, Bertrand. Bob, I think you have already commented, so is that correct?
I did, but I have a later, and I'll come back later. I have another comment I want to make.
Do you want to come in now?
Yep, thanks. So there's been some suggestions of, bringing this to the board. I think if we brought this to the board for a project, the board couldn't address the narrow fact pattern. What you'd have to do is you'd have to think about the broader issue. You think of that, think about scope. You have to think about Paul's question. Paul's question is, when do we treat the sale of shares as the sale of an asset? It's not an issue that is only for IFRS 16. I think for the board to do a proper job, they would have to think about that issue, not only for IFRS 16, but also we also brought up previously under IFRS 15, you'd have to think about it for that, IS 16, et cetera. So Bertrand made an example, made a comment before that I kind of dismissed, and now I think maybe it does have some merit. We could address this agenda issue. To this agenda, the broader object of when is a sale of shares really should be treated as a sale of an asset.
It's very broad. John.
Yes, thanks, Sue. It's been interesting to listen to this conversation because I admit after reading the submissions and the responses to the tentative agenda decision, I too is struggling with the question of, is there a logical place to draw the line? And I found myself in strong agreement with the conclusions reached in this fact pattern, but appreciate that perhaps this fact pattern is simplistic in its construct and maybe not reflective of reality. And as soon as you start to add other things to the asset being disposed of, whether it's tax attributes or other things that may eventually, when added together, constitute a business, was worried that the tentative agenda decision might have unintended consequences that would merit discussion, and found myself leaning more towards the view that maybe a tentative agenda decision would be not the appropriate path, but rather some sort of narrow amendment to the standards would be more appropriate by the board, though I fully appreciate the comments made by Bob that I think to do so will quickly become a challenging issue as well, because the question can become very complex and I think become something that will be hard to manage in some sort of narrow standard setting process. With that said, I do believe that's probably the best course of action from what I see today, because I think a tentative agenda decision would either be establishing a principle in areas where maybe we don't, where maybe that's not appropriate, and maybe beyond this, the responsibilities of the interpretation committee, or would cause people to disregard the tentative agenda decision because it would be viewed as applying in a limited set of facts and circumstances, which may not be representative of their particular transaction and therefore have limited utility.
Thank you, John. Carsten, did you want to come back in?
Yes, thanks. So just briefly, I'd like to comment on two things. First is on the overlay approach. And, personally, I don't agree with the suggestion of some others that the agenda decision as drafted would necessarily have those broader implications. So I think this discussion has shown that there are, divergent views on where to draw the line. And personally, I don't see that our agenda decision necessarily means that you get to the same answer in the more complex cases. So, similar to Bob, I guess, in some respects, but I would also consider the guidance in BC 261 as well when drawing that line. Second point I want to make on the overlay approach is that I'm not sure people necessarily mean the same thing when they talk about an overlay approach. I think there are two possible ways to look at this. So the first one is essentially, to first apply IFRS 10 and then overlay this, say, Lisbeck requirements in IFRS 16 as suggested in the staff paper. But I think there's another option here, which is, even based on the current words in the agenda decision, which is to apply both IFRS 10 and IFRS 16. I think that's what the agenda decision clearly says, but it doesn't suggest any specific order. And so, I think there is also an alternative route to say, there is, that IFRS 16 with respect to gain recognition provides, the more relevant and specific guidance. So the agenda decision doesn't say you apply IFRS 10 first. And this is, for me at least, the reason why I think it doesn't necessarily have broader implications on other fact patterns. The second comment I wanted to make was on narrow scope standard setting. My understanding of the suggestion in the staff paper was, that the suggestion is to include a cross-reference in IFRS 10, similar to the ones in IS 16, IS 38, and IS 40. So the reason I wasn't supportive of this narrow scope standard setting is that my sense was that this wouldn't solve the issues around the more complex fact patterns, even if we did that type of standard setting. So I would be supportive of standard setting, just not necessarily this narrow scope standard setting that would, just include a cross-reference. So I think it's, as others have said, a broader approach would be necessary to any standard setting. Thank you.
Thank you. And that probably depends on how you think the interaction's meant to work today. If you think it's always meant to be an overlay, then it's quite simple, right? So it's, again, difference of how people are reading the words. Michael, did you want to come in?
Yeah, just a short comment. It's been a really interesting debate. I guess a couple of observations I'd make is that often the committee discusses specific fact patterns and others may lead to different conclusions. And I think the tendency is that the fact pattern is the fact pattern that the committee has been presented with. And others may be more common fact patterns. I guess the question that's been raised here by some is whether it may be misleading to conclude on this particular fact pattern. And my observation would be that from the reading of the standards, I don't think it's misleading in terms of the conclusion, and that's how the standards apply, even though the fact pattern may not be entirely realistic. And I remember back to that pensions question the committee had a year or two ago about where there was a lot of scepticism about the question, but nevertheless, I think the question was answered. I did listen to Bertrand and Jim and the others' comments. It does seem to me, I mean, you will advise me that a conclusion can be come to on a specific fact pattern, but nevertheless, there is still a broader question that can be considered by the board. And so having something issued and also having some standard setting doesn't seem entirely incompatible to me. But certainly, you know, my own view would be that I agreed with the analysis and the conclusion for this fact pattern.
Thank you, Michael. Okay. Yang Su, did you want to come back in?
Yes, yes, thank you. You know, when I heard the others saying, I was able to remember, you know, we changed our agenda decision. I mean, when I first joined the committee, our agenda decision simply described what is the conclusion of the committee. But in the middle of my career, you know, we changed the agenda decision into educative agenda decision. By educative agenda decision, we try to explain the way of thinking. I mean, the way we get to the conclusion. And so that I think the current agenda decision, you know, in that agenda decision, two things are important. The first one is the conclusion itself, and the other one is the way of thinking, the way to get to the conclusion. I sometimes think that the way to get to the conclusion is more important than the conclusion itself, because we want to give people the way of thinking. So if there's any, you know, the loopholes or the missing point, as I said, you know, we do not explain when to apply the overlay approach or when not to apply the overlay approach. So if we find out any missing point, I think we have to think more about that. So I want to say that conclusion is important, but you know, the way of thinking, the way to get to the conclusion is also important in our agenda decision. So that is, I think, why many people says that this agenda decision should be, you know, sent to the board for a more thorough standard setting. And I think we need that too. Thank you.
Thank you, Yang Su. Rika.
Thank you, Sue. I just shared my concern about doing two things at the same time, meaning the doing issuance of this agenda decision and working on narrow scope amendment. I think the scope of narrow scope will be wider than the scope as we discuss right now. That is clear, but that scope will include what we are discussed today. So I mean, the future, we don't know about the future development in at the board. That means the future development of that amendment might affect the analysis of this paper itself. So I would like to think there is only two options for answer, not the mixing up two options for this matter. Thank you.
Thanks, Rika. I think that's a good reminder. Brian, did you want to come in?
Yeah, thanks, Sue. Just very, very quickly, some reflection on the discussion. I think it's been a really, really good discussion with incredibly kind of high quality comments across the board. I've been very, very impressed with it. I worry, having heard the discussion, that if we go ahead and finalise the agenda decision, then the very people who've been discussing this today, the actual members of the committee who are going to be voting on this agenda decision, will go their separate ways with different views as to the consequences of the agenda decision in practice on different fact patterns. I've heard some people say they will be voting on a really important principle, some people saying they'd be voting on something that was specific to the fact pattern, some people saying that they'd examine other fact patterns to see how close they were to this fact pattern. You know, I could go on. I just worry. You know, I'm not in favour of finalising the agenda decision. I'm concerned that the very people, you know, the very group that would potentially be issuing the agenda decision would walk away with different views on its impact.
Thanks, Brian. Jens?
Yeah, I only can echo what Brian just mentioned, that it looks like we have very different views on the fact pattern, which is a little bit surprising after finalizing and thinking about and took my recollections on our tentative agenda decision, where we had more of a concern honestly, I think at that point I wanted to understand what is now the way going forward. So the staff paper allows for either finalizing the agenda decision or making these cross-reference in IFRS 10, but I've heard that others are more into broader standard-setting process. I still stick with finalizing the agenda decision, and if there is any standard-setting needed, this could be subject to the post-implementation review, so this could be picked up later on. But I think this is all I'd like to say at this point in time right now.
Thank you, Jens. So, trying not to be too heavy-handed, but trying to be to provide a few thoughts before I ask for the vote. I think Paul and Brian both put it quite well. I think the discussion that we've had has sort of reinforced. The sort of sneaking suspicion I had before the discussion started that even though I think there's a pretty consistent agreement that the outcome in the agenda decision is, you know, the appropriate outcome, to use a neutralish word, for the very narrow fact pattern provided, there's different lines being drawn about how, you know, how different the fact pattern could be, and it would still be appropriate to reach the same conclusion. And given that we require people to apply agenda decisions to be in accordance with IFRS, and given that I think that we are opining on a fact pattern which most of us think would probably very rarely, if ever, actually arise in its exact facts, in such a simple, simple fact pattern. So inevitably the question is going to be, how far do I apply this agenda decision? I think we need to be conscious of the fact that we might all give different answers to how far we would apply this agenda decision. Even though it's articulated in its narrow fact pattern, we should be trying to sort of shed light on how to read our words. And I think we've got very big differences of opinion in where we would draw the line in the room for different reasons, and you know, very good basis for people reaching different decisions, but some of them, you know, are closer to the words than the others as well. So I think we need to think about that. So to issue an agenda decision, we need to, as a committee, be comfortable, or you as a committee, need to be comfortable that we're not changing or adding to the requirements in our literature as well. And that we are actually going to help, I think, improve consistent application. And I think that's a little bit more difficult given the discussion that we have had. A few people are suggesting, I think people would like to know what the narrow scope standard setting would look like. I think that's a hard one to answer on the cuff, and I'm not sure that that should drive whether or not it's appropriate to issue an agenda decision. An agenda decision in its own right has got very strict criteria around it. I think what we'd be seeking to do with narrow scope standard setting, though, is to try and provide more clarity about how the interaction between 10 and 16 works, in a way that enables people to answer a range of questions. So that could be as simple as something like a cross-reference, which would mean that the interaction between 10 and 16 would always work in this way, if we thought that was appropriate. Or it could be more complex if we wanted to have different outcomes. But I think that really is a separate question. With that, and I know I'm being a little heavy-handed as a chair, but I'm trying to make sure that we are, you know, just thinking of the complexity of the topic. I'm going to ask for a show of hands on who would support looking at narrow scope standard setting at this point. Can I get a show of hands for narrow scope standard setting?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. I'm counting eight. I'll just repeat one, two, three, four.
In addition to the people you can see, I would also vote for narrow scope standard setting.
Okay, so I think that I'm seeing nine. I'm just going to count again to be sure. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Yes, that's nine.
Okay, so that's a majority, yes? Okay, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, that's right.
All right, thank you. That was a good discussion. I think that was a really helpful discussion, and I've got a much better idea of where people sit and why as a result of the discussion, which is really helpful for us as well and me for thinking about the narrow scope standard setting. So thank you for all your comments. I think a really good discussion, so thank you. Tricky issue. With that, I think, Petrina, we're allowed to have a break now?
Yeah, I think everybody deserves a break.
Shall we break for 10 minutes? Until 1:40 UK time. So I'll see you back then. Thank you.